Well, Pauline Hanson has been making headlines in the UK, where she's been meeting with a number of controversial political figures as part of what she's called a two-week fact-finding mission. The One Nation leader has met with pop star turned right-wing advocate Holly Valance, former Conservative Prime Minister Liz Truss, as well as the far-right anti-Islam activist Tommy Robinson. You may remember Tommy Robinson's recent appearance on Carl Stefanovic's podcast last month led Channel 9 to severing ties with Stefanovic. It comes as fresh opinion polling has indicated One Nation's popularity has stalled somewhat and is starting to decline. So what lessons could Pauline Hanson be hoping to learn from Britain's most notorious far-right activist? Daniel Trilling is an author and journalist who covers the rise of Britain's far-right. I spoke to him a short time ago. Daniel, One Nation leader Pauline Hanson has been meeting with a number of controversial political figures during a visit to the UK, most notably far-right activist Tommy Robinson. How is he regarded by Britain's political mainstream?
Tommy Robinson is a highly controversial figure in Britain. He's widely regarded as a far-right extremist who spreads disinformation and inflammatory rhetoric about migration and Islam and other issues. But he has got a relatively large following among members of the public. He's able to draw people out onto the streets to rally in support of his causes, and he has a huge following on social media.
How does Nigel Farage's Reform UK view him?
They keep a strategic distance from him. Reform UK's whole strategy is to present themselves as the acceptable face of the new right and to distance themselves from any hint of extremism or violence. And so a figure like Tommy Robinson is somebody that they say they don't want to be associated with.
Is there a sense in Britain that far-right activists like Tommy Robinson are becoming more mainstream or acceptable to the general public?
For somebody like Tommy Robinson, he's got a very loyal core of support. I would say opinion polls show that around 10 to 11% of the population agree with what he has to say, but there's maybe another 10 to 20% of people who are sympathetic to some of his claims and his narrative. And, you know, that's quite a new development in the UK for a figure that extreme to have that amount of support. His support is still a minority of the population. Where he is influential, though, I think, is in pulling the whole of UK political debate to the right.
What do we know about Tommy Robinson's criminal record?
He has a string of criminal convictions going back many years. Some of them are directly related to his political activity. So a couple of years ago, he spent quite a few months in prison for repeating lies about a teenage Syrian boy when he'd been ordered to stop doing that by a court. He has a restraining order against him for stalking and harassing a female journalist who was doing perfectly legitimate reporting on what he was doing with all the money that he'd received in donations from his supporters. He's also spent time in prison for mortgage fraud. So that's an offence not related to his political activity, obviously. But Robinson, for his supporters at least, has been able to turn all of these convictions into a kind of grievance narrative. He presents himself as the little guy who is battling against the establishment and that he's being persecuted simply for telling the truth, which ironically is a total lie.
How much has Tommy Robinson been courting far-right figures from elsewhere or right-leaning journalists from elsewhere? Or is it the other way around, that they're courting him?
I think it's a bit of both, really. I mean, Robinson is a very useful figure for people who want to advance the causes that he has associated himself with, because he's adept at using social media and in-person events to communicate his ideas and to build up grassroots support. But Robinson also couldn't do this without the financial and logistical backing of a whole range of different wealthy right-wing figures from around the world. He's got significant support from Elon Musk, for instance. You know, Robinson was actually banned from Twitter, as it then was, because of his extreme content that he was posting on the platform. Musk, when he bought Twitter, unbanned Tommy Robinson. Musk has spoken at his rallies in London via video link. And at the same time, Robinson has received significant amounts of money from right-wing backers elsewhere in the world. For example, Robert Shillman, a US-based tech businessman who supports anti-Islam and pro-Israel causes. So I think there's a two-way street there. And I think also the reason why Pauline Hanson has come to the UK to do this interview stunt with Tommy Robinson is because she also will be looking to put herself forward as the leading far-right figure in Australia and therefore attract the support of the same kind of people that have already put their backing behind Robinson.
On a trip to the UK, Australian podcaster Carl Stefanovic also sat down with Rupert Lowe from another populist party called Restore Britain. What can you tell us about them? Are they further to the right than Tommy Robinson and his supporters?
I'd say they were roughly in the same space as Robinson, the difference being they're a political party that is putting up candidates for elections now. Restore has only emerged quite recently as a breakaway from Reform UK and has positioned itself to the right of Reform. So Rupert Lowe, the leader of Reform, calls Nigel Farage a sellout, effectively, and says he's not taking a hardline enough stance, for instance, on the deportation of illegal immigrants from the UK. What that tells us, actually, is that although this wing of politics, you know, everything from Farage to Tommy Robinson has grown significantly in the last 5 to 10 years and is a real threat now in the UK, that despite all of that, it is also very prone to splits and falling outs and internal contradictions. So it's both, I think, alarming as a development, but certainly its success is not guaranteed for these reasons.
What part of the major parties played in creating something of a political vacuum that has now been occupied by some of these far right parties when people's grievances from the local, the county and the national level about standards of living and changes in their neighbourhood, if people feel that they have not been adequately addressed?
I think the success of far-right politics in the UK, as elsewhere, is really an index of failures in the political mainstream. I think many people in Britain at the moment feel like the economy is not working for them and prospects for the future certainly don't look better and perhaps look worse. Politics itself does not deliver. You know, people feel that the traditional mainstream parties have either not provided enough of a choice between one another politically, or that they've constantly promised to do things politically that they then haven't followed through on. I mean, the UK has had 10 years of political paralysis mainly since the Brexit referendum, and that's led to a lot of frustration in the country. And then successive governments have mishandled the politics of immigration, where they've both failed to make the case for why Britain's economy requires immigration to grow and to succeed and to bring prosperity to the country, while at the same time pandering to anti-immigration rhetoric coming from the far right. And the situation that that's left us with is that mainstream politics has ended up displeasing pretty much everybody.
Daniel, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.